52% of Minnesotans say religion is very important to their lives. That puts us slightly below national average. In other words, we're not an especially religious state. We're portrayed as mild-mannered Lutherans in the media, more coffee and lefse than fire and brimstone. But immigration in the last couple decades has complicated old stereotypes. It's not just Lutherans and Catholics with an occasional synagogue here and there anymore. Today, Hindu and Buddhist temples and mosques are popping up in even the Twin Cities' most far-flung suburbs. And we were the first state to elect a Muslim member of Congress. There are generational changes underway, too. Polls show that young people today are considerably less interested in religion than baby boomers and Gen X. Tonight, we'll look at two faith communities in Minneapolis, one established nearly a century ago, one far more recent, to see how generational changes, cultural identity, and immigration are changing how and why they worship.
It never occurred to me to go anywhere. If I was going to go to a church, it was going to be this one. Why? I mean, why bother? If you're going to spend the time and the effort, you might as well go someplace that has something to offer that's really unique and interesting.
That's Ingen Henriksen, and the church she's talking about is the Norwegian Lutheran Memorial Church in South Minneapolis, or as congregation members know it, Mindekirken. Mindekirken is one of only two churches in the country that use Norwegian as a main language of worship. The church offers an English service too, but for Ingen, who was born in Norway but mostly grew up in the U.S., it's the Norwegian that puts her in the pews on Sunday.
I think it's just the fact that it's in Norwegian and that it's, I mean, it's a little bit of an oddity, isn't it, that you find this Norwegian language service that's been going on for 90-odd years now, and it's in the heart of the Phillips neighborhood in Minneapolis. So there's just this weirdness to it that I think is very interesting and attractive, and I don't know. It's just tradition at this point.
You could say that the church is a bit of an oddity. On the one hand, for some people, Norwegian Lutherans are exactly what comes to mind when they think of Minnesota. But standing on Franklin Avenue behind the church, we're in a very different Minnesota. On this strip in the Phillips community, you'll find a lot of East African immigrants, American Indian organizations, and a bit further to the south, a thriving Latino business corridor. Other than the church, there are few reminders of the Norwegian immigrants who lived in the area a century ago. But the Norwegian Americans who've sustained Mindekirken for 90 years aren't that different from the groups that dominate Ventura Village today. In this neighborhood, where nearly half the residents speak a language other than English at home, there are signs all around of groups working to maintain their cultural identities in the face of pressure to assimilate.
We were founded in 1922 by Norwegians who wanted to continue worshiping in their native language.
This is Orlin Kringstad, Mindekirken's congregation president.
1922 was just a few years after World War I. There was a very nationalistic time in our country, a period in our country where people were frowning on speaking foreign languages. So we sometimes, sort of tongue-in-cheek, say there was a few hard-headed Norwegians that just simply weren't going to change. I think in the early days, there was something written that said that we will have a Norwegian church with services in Norwegian for as long as people continue to speak Norwegian here. And I think probably they were thinking at that time, maybe a generation. I think those founding members of this church would be very surprised and very gratified to know that 90 years later, we're still worshiping in Norwegian, and that the church is still very vibrant and culturally and spiritually sound.
Today, Mindekirken has around 200 full members, and 70 to 80 people show up on a regular Sunday. That's a healthy congregation size, especially when you consider that immigration from Norway to Minnesota has slowed to a trickle. Over the last decade, the number of Norwegians becoming U.S. permanent residents in Minnesota averaged only around 9 per year. So, much of Mindisjøen's survival is due to second, third, and fourth generation Norwegian Americans in search of their roots. Orland's parents were born in Norway, and he's lived there several times. Back here in Minnesota, the church keeps him connected to those Norwegian ties.
Norwegian culture has been a part of my life forever. And the being here at Mindisjøen and worshiping in Norwegian is part of, it's a term we sometimes used, that I sometimes use, ethnic anchor. It's sort of like it anchors me to where I am.
Kristin Sundt has been pastor at Mindisjøen since 2009. She's a native of Norway, like most of the church's previous pastors. But unlike a lot of her predecessors, she'd been living in the U.S. for years before she was called to Mindisjøen. She sees the church's cultural niche as an integral part of its success.
Well, I think, you know, we are more than a church, you know, and I think we have to be more than a church to have, you know, survived these 90 years. So we are very much like, I often say that we're very much like the Norwegian seamen churches that the Norwegian, the Church of Norway have, you know, spread all over the world. So we, you know, definitely are a church, but we are also a cultural expression of everything that have to do with Norway.
Since 2000, Mindisjøen has hosted language classes for those looking to learn or improve their Norwegian. There are also classes and seminars on Norwegian cooking, dance, and genealogy.
And that's the largest community-based Norwegian language program in the United States, so we're very proud of that.
In these times, when a lot of Lutheran and other mainline Protestant congregations are losing members, Mindisjøen's cultural offerings help it to stand out. The classes and special events bring lots of people into contact with the church who don't worship there, but maybe could someday. Like Kaja Knutsen. She first visited the church as an adult when she and other members of the Augsburg College Norwegian class came to help out the church choir for a royal visit by then-Princess Sonja. She's been office secretary at the church since 1988, but her interest in Norwegian culture goes back further than that.
I had a strong identity with Norway when I was growing up, even though I hadn't been to Norway. My grandparents were all from Norway, and I really adored the place. Anything Norwegian kind of clung to me. My mother took me and my siblings to Norway for a visit when I was 16. That was my first trip there. And at that moment, I decided I wanted to learn to speak Norwegian. I like languages, and I like the country. And I thought, oh, wouldn't it be fun to come back here and pretend I'm Norwegian? So I learned to speak Norwegian. And then there aren't that many places in the city where you are in a room full of people speaking Norwegian, so that definitely was a draw.
Even though she didn't learn the language until later in life, Kaja says attending the Norwegian language service helps her to be more present during church.
I think just my enjoyment of pronouncing the Norwegian words and understanding, you know, hearing the scriptures in a different language then English makes me pay a little more attention. When I hear them in English, I tend to tune out a little bit, maybe because I grew up being so saturated with church that I took a break from it. But when I hear things in Norwegian, it just gives a little extra color and charm to me.
This year, Mindisjøen celebrates 90 years as a congregation. A lot has changed in the American religious landscape in those 90 years. According to the Pew Research Center, a quarter of so-called millennials, those in their late teens to early 30s, are religiously unaffiliated, meaning they describe themselves as atheist, agnostic, or nothing in particular. That's twice the rate of their baby boomer parents. Mindisjøen isn't immune from these trends, but those I talked to had restrained optimism about the church's future.
Well, probably the median age, if you take everybody, it's, you know, probably high. You know, that's true probably for most churches. We are lacking, you know, a lot of older youth and, you know, teenagers and that population. We have, you know, some younger families. We have some babies, but not so many in kind of the middle generation. We have young adults, but there are certainly some gaps, you know, generational gaps that we have. But I'm hopeful, you know.
Church leaders look to Norwegian language class enrollment at places like the Midwest's Lutheran colleges and Concordia language villages as indicators of a healthy interest in Norwegian culture among young people in the region, though Pastor Sundt acknowledges more could be done to reach out to them.
Well, I think we have to be more clever to address the needs of younger people that are interested in Norway, you know, but we are not maybe in touch with them, or maybe they're not aware of us.
Ingunn says that while there aren't a ton of younger people at Mindeskirken, she's encouraged by those who do come regularly.
There's a core group of young people, and young people who now have babies, so that's good, you know, fresh blood, and I think that's really important to see that there's basically little ones in the congregation, and that they need to be, those families need to be protected and nurtured a little bit. They're not the only members of the congregation that we need to be attracting, but that's, you know, that's one component.
And the church draws a lot of young families on special occasions like Christmas and 17. Mai, the Norwegian Constitution Day on May 17th. At this year's 17. Mai celebration, which Ingunn helped organize, babies are everywhere, and little kids show off their traditional Norwegian costumes in a neighborhood parade.
Norwegians are pretty stubborn, so I don't know. I honestly don't know. I think that we will probably be willing to have that sermon in Norwegian for as long as people will put up with it. But it is, I think it's what makes us unique. So, I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what the future will hold.
It's going to be very difficult. It's always been very difficult to know how robust we will remain to be.
Here's Congregation President Orlin Kringstad once more.
It really depends on the number of native-born Norwegians that are moving into the area, because they're always a draw for other people as well, and keep the language and the culture and the music and all of the other aspects of the church authentic, because we are very, very authentic here. However, if I'm pushed to predict, I would say that we will be strong, robust, active, at least another generation.
Even though the neighborhood has changed and Norwegians aren't coming to Minnesota in the numbers they were a century ago, Norwegian identity is still strong in the Twin Cities. So strong that Mindeskirken draws some worshipers from as far as an hour away each week, even though there are plenty of other Lutheran churches in the metro.
I think we exist kind of as a curiosity a lot of time for visitors, but sometimes it just really hits the spot of what they're looking for in their kind of ethnic identity.
On the other side of town, in northeast Minneapolis, another religious community gathers for a special event. The Goethe Wheel of Dharma Monastery has easily drawn hundreds of area Tibetan Buddhists for Sakadawa, a festival that commemorates the Buddha's birth, enlightenment, and entry into nirvana. Worshippers sit on the floor in front of an elaborate altar. They pray and make offerings of dried meat and Ritz cracker sandwiches. Monks chant with a low didgeridoo-like timbre. There are a lot of kids, some following along in prayer books with their parents, others playing on iPhones, and some go outside to play after a while. Minnesota is home to the second largest Tibetan community in the United States. There are between 2,000 and 3,000 Tibetans in the area. Many came from exile communities in India, while a few others came directly from Tibet. Tibetans started coming to the state by the hundreds in the 1990s, which means there's now a generation of young Tibetans that have grown up mostly or even entirely in Minnesota. So what's it like to be raised Tibetan, Buddhist, and Minnesotan?
I know my mom's been here for the last 3 days since Friday night. She's been here praying. She's been sleeping also with
Tenzin Wallig is a 21-year-old recent graduate of St. Olaf College, and this is how he's observing Sakadawa.
So definitely it is like important day and where you can earn a lot of significant amount of good merit and also can cause yourself bad merit. So for instance, today I didn't eat any meat because my parents recommended that I don't eat any meat. And I think, you know, it's just a small sacrifice we have to make. We don't eat meat for a single day. It's not a huge thing, but it's an important thing to take part of because of the fact that it's our belief.
It wasn't always easy growing up Buddhist in Minnesota. Tenzin came to the U.S. from India when he was a little kid, only 7 or 8 years old, an age when fitting in with one's peers tends to become a priority.
Seeing your friends and you want to be accepted when you're younger and when you're first coming into America, you don't want to be alone. So that's one of the biggest fears you have as a child coming to a new country. You don't want to be alone, so you kind of want to be accepted. There was a clash of like multiple cultures. You have your Tibetan culture and then you have your Indian culture where you come from. And at the same time, you're trying getting into this American culture and trying to assimilate, but at the same time not being too assimilated. So you're kind of confused at that moment, especially at a young age when you're like 8 or 10. You don't know which culture you should focus more on and which one to take and give from.
Juggling new languages and customs on top of school and extracurriculars also left little time for a child's religious education.
I did go to Tibetan school, try to learn Tibetan and everything. Of course, I had a hard time learning Tibetan because I was trying to learn English at the same time. And learning two languages at the same time was just really difficult. Without understanding Tibetan and reading it, it's hard to kind of learn more about the religion itself because there weren't a lot of scriptures or books that were documented or translated into English during that time.
A lot of the youth I talked to said learning Tibetan, at least at a level high enough to read from prayer books and religious texts, was a challenge growing up in the Twin Cities. They say language and the pace of life in the U.S. have contributed to a generational knowledge gap in some families when it comes to Buddhism.
My name is Nawang Dolker. I came to the United States in 1996. I think parents, I mean, here most of them work like two jobs, you know, to support their families, and worrying about the kids' education, you know, religion is pushed back a little. Because parents, I mean, they all know like the prayers, they know them by heart. Most of them, they even recite them in the morning, you know. But for us, we don't have it memorized.
I asked Nawang if this causes tensions between parents and children, and she says, not really.
I don't think it caused tensions, you know, like, I don't think our parents would yell at us if we don't read our text or anything. I guess it's a little, maybe it's a little embarrassing, kind of, you know, because other religion, they have, I mean, churches here. They know, like, the prayers, you know, from the Bible. And then us here, we read our text, like, the prayer books, but we don't understand what it means, you know. And then lifestyle here, just with college, then college just takes over your life, you know. It's homework and finals and tests and everything. And then after that, you try to find a job, and then you get busy with your job, and I don't know. I guess it's just, there's just a lot of excuses to push things aside.
Tenzin Sonam just graduated from high school. He doesn't really remember a life outside of the U.S. since he came to this country when he was only 2. He sees some of the same generational differences, but says parents and other relatives make sure to pass on religious and cultural principles on a daily basis.
Well, generations, I think I can say that the older generations, our grandparents, they know much more about Buddhism, they know much more about Tibetan history than first my parents do. And then I can say that my parents know more than maybe the younger generations like me do. Growing up in exile in Minnesota and other states, for other students around the United States, we necessarily don't get to practice in Buddhism every day, or we necessarily don't get to learn about our culture, our religion every day. But, you know, hearing stories from our parents, hearing stories from our grandparents, we learn about Buddhism every day.
Tenzin was able to take advantage of weekend classes in Tibetan language that have been offered to kids through the Tibetan American Foundation of Minnesota. Nawong and the first Tenzin we met, Tenzin Wallach, say the Tibetan Culture School program has done a lot to help the next generation of Tibetan American kids overcome the language barriers.
For these younger ones, they're actually learning prayers during their schools here. So every Saturday morning, they will all pray together. And they know the prayers. And I don't know the prayers that they know.
Nowadays, we have younger kids with the Tibetan school. They're learning Tibetan at a really nice, strong, fast pace. And I have little cousins who speak, who can write Tibetan better than I can, who can read. And of course, that sometimes kind of motivates me even to study. But at the same time, it's kind of really bright to see that there's the younger generations who are really understanding Tibetan language. And I think understanding the language kind of preserves the culture really strongly.
Not all the younger Tibetans in Minnesota grew up here, though, as there are new Tibetans of all ages arriving each year.
Oh, it's a very interesting story. I was a monk. I joined a monastery since age of 7. Until
Thupten Tenzin came to the U.S. 7 years ago. Before that, he lived most of his life in a monastery in India. He first came to this country as part of a group of touring monks, and then later worked in a Buddhism center in New Hampshire before moving on to Minnesota, attracted by what he'd heard of our state's growing Tibetan population and openness towards immigrants. You'd think the transition from a monastic upbringing in India to life in Minnesota as an immigrant and layperson would be difficult, but Thupten says this wasn't the case for him.
I don't consider this as a really hard work. For me, being a monk before, and then to come into the working, is always you have to always balance how hard it is. Even being a monk is not easy at all. Even you don't have to do like a lot of physical job, but mentally you always work hard.
It wasn't hard to hang on to his faith because, as he explains, Buddhism is a religion that you can bring with you anywhere.
The practice of Buddhism is your set of your mind. So in Buddhist religion, you don't consider that as a become a religious person, it's not necessary that you have to become a monk and nuns.
When I talk to other Tibetans like Thupten, those who arrived more recently and who came to the U.S. as young adults, they all said something similar, that Minnesota is a fine place to be a Buddhist because it's the principles you live by that make you a Buddhist, not temples or texts or mantras.
After all, if you are practicing with yourself, if you are a Buddhist, you are always a Buddhist. And what matters is how you see life. And wherever you go, you see life the same way. My name is Dechen Jamling, and I've been living here in Minnesota for the last 2 years.
Dechen came to Kentucky from India for college and then moved to Minnesota after graduating.
So I think places doesn't matter. The thing is what you carry with your everyday life, and what your beliefs are, is what matters. And this is simple. I'm a Buddhist.
I always think, you know, it's very good to learn the real Buddhism, I guess. But then, especially the youngsters like us, you know, I really see the Buddhism as a psychology. Hello, everyone. Like, very formally.
Shenpen is the only person I talk to who was actually raised in Tibet.
Well, my name's Shenpen, S-H-E-N-P-H-E-N.
He came to the U.S. with his family 4 years ago when he was 18. And coming here really allowed him to practice his religion freely for the first time.
Came from my parents. They always, you know, pray for the Dalai Lama, you know, and then even though, the picture of Dalai Lama is not allowed in Tibet, it's just completely not allowed. If the Chinese government see or find something, it's whether you're going to be tortured, going to jail for several years of that. So, and then after came here, obviously, you know, having the opportunity to display as large as I want the picture of Dalai Lama in my house, it's just literally beyond any words to describe that. You know, seeing the smile face of His Holiness just bless me, you know, every day when I go to school. But
coming to Minnesota also allowed him to become an activist. In fact, almost everyone I spoke to is involved in some way with groups like the Regional Tibetan Youth Congress and Students for a Free Tibet. Their religious principles carry into their political lives as the groups emphasize nonviolence in their activities. Many Tibetan youth in Minnesota participate in White Wednesday, a global movement for Tibetans to resist the Chinese occupation by promoting Tibetan culture and identity.
Oh yeah, and fortunately we're here in Wednesday today. Every Wednesday, it's called Lhagar in Tibetan. It literally means White Wednesday, and it's the sole day of His Holiness the Dalai Lama.
Lhagar is a Tibetan movement that started inside Tibet, and on Lhagar, all the Tibetans, they try to be, they practice Tibetanness, meaning either you put on a Tibetan dress or speak pure Tibetan language, eat Tibetan food.
Yeah, I love Minnesota, especially the weather really fits me well.
Really?
The weather is
though
just
he longs for a free Tibet, Shenpen says he likes
so
his new life
I'm
in Minnesota.
I'm planning to stay here, you know, for as long as I can.
As he and his fellow young Tibetan Americans pursue their educations and careers, they often find Buddhist concepts of compassion and non-harm work their way into their future plans. They also follow the Dalai Lama's call for Buddhists to combine their beliefs with modern education, or, as Shenpen explains, to be a 21st century Buddhist.
As you know, His Holiness always used the term to reference us as the 21st century of Buddhist. So what that means, you know, we just don't pray every day, but we have to learn everything about Buddhism. You know, my parents, they grew up in, you know, little villages in Tibet, so they didn't get that much opportunity to learn the, you know, 21st century education, technology or other stuff, but simply believing Buddhism. But here, you know, youth, we have the opportunity, we have the chance to, you know, touch with the outside world, to learn just beyond Buddhism itself.
Tenzin Wallig was able to take classes on Buddhism at St. Olaf, which he says has helped him to investigate his own beliefs.
I mean, for me, for instance, I've been able to study Buddhism in a lot of my courses at St. Olaf. And studying Buddhism isn't, for me, isn't just reading it, it's thinking about it critically. And as the Buddha kind of says, investigate on your own kind of thing, I kind of take that into my mentality.
While life in Minnesota is shaping how a lot of young Tibetans practice and think about their religion, it's not a one-way street. Though their numbers are small, they're leaving their mark on Minnesota too.
Interesting thing was my first year roommate, he took Buddhism course also, I think last year with me, and now he's a Buddhist. He converted. And he told me over Facebook, and so that was really interesting for me, kind of seeing one of my roommates become Buddhist. And he had that kind of simple idea of life being simple, so he really liked the idea of Buddhism.
Mini Culture on KFAI is made possible by listeners like you and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.